Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark of PremierLeague.com and Tom Hopkinson of the Sunday Mirror. A year ago today, Chelsea announced Antonio Conte as their new manager. They have taken being 7 points clear with 9 games to play, yet people are talking about the title race being blown wide open. Surely they can't lose it from here, can they?
Of course they're not going to lose it from here. Do you think that Antonio Conte would allow that to happen? I don't think so. When I look at Chelsea, I see a streetwise group of players. Obviously, we know what happened last year. They underperformed hugely. But this season, they've been a machine. And I don't think there's too much wrong with that machine. I think only a serious injury crisis could really, really hamper them from here on in. When I looked at that performance against Palace, they could have scored plenty. Eden Hazard was still on song, wasn't he? Diego Costa didn't bring his shooting boots that particular game, did he? But I think that their key players are still playing pretty well. There's one or two wobbles, I thought, with David Luiz and Gary Cahill. I don't think he's in as good a form as he was. But no, I think this Chelsea side is a mean machine and I can't see them faltering in the running.
You were at the game, Tom. What was Conte's reaction afterwards? Because he is a hard taskmaster and I would imagine he must have been mortified.
What was interesting was that he took quite a while to come out to address the press after the game. I think it was about 5:45, 5:50 when he came out, which is not very good for us because we're on 6 p.m. deadline, so we're sitting there getting a little bit fraught about that. But it obviously there was a big inquest going on in the dressing room. You know, that's always the case when managers come out. And, you know, whether it was more of a positive look, you know, it's a little blip, let's get on with it, or whether he tore into them. Managers will never tell us anything like that. But it was almost a little shell-shocked, I thought, the way he spoke. He didn't expand on any of his answers, really. It was almost like he still hadn't quite got his head around what had gone wrong. I agree with Aid. I mean, it wasn't a bad performance from them. They created chance after chance. Palace, they just defended incredibly well, particularly given the fact that they lost James Tompkins at half-time and then his replacement, Scott Dan, 10 minutes later. So Sacco was an absolute beast at the back. Delaney came on and did well. Joel Ward at right-back was good. And Wayne Hennessy had an absolute worldie performance when, you know, the number of mistakes Wayne Hennessy has made this year, and I say mistakes, that's probably the number of times he's been unlucky is probably closer to it because he's not always had the rub of the green. It all came together for him in one game. So I think it's going to be a very tight game against Manchester City. The one thing I do wonder is how much Chelsea will be impacted by Victor Moses' loss. And it just seemed to slightly unbalance the side because they played Pedro. And I wondered if Willian is probably a little bit more defensively aware than Pedro.
I would agree. I would say that Willian would be a better right-wing back option than Pedro. And it goes to show, doesn't it, how important the cogs in the wheel are. Each of them is really important. And they've fine-tuned it so excellently, Chelsea, this season. Just take one or two out and it's not the same.
And who'd have thought Alonso, and you know, if we're saying at this stage of the season that losing Marcus Alonso, previously of Sunderland and Bolton, or Victor Moses, previous journeyman around all the clubs here, there and everywhere, who'd have thought that they would be the two players that if you did lose them, they just unbalanced that Chelsea side?
I've been really impressed with Cesc Fabregas because, you know, everyone had pretty much written his professional obituary, but there's some quiet excellence going on there. He's showing what he is, a seasoned, experienced, class player.
Well, he's an exceptionally gifted footballer, isn't he, Cesc Fabregas, a class act. I actually would say that even though he's playing really well at the moment, I think he's in good nick, even the fact that he is playing in one of those two advanced midfield positions, is actually having an adverse effect, because it's just worked so well with Pedro and Hazard, with the movement, the mobility. They were so hard to pick up. And Fabregas cannot replicate that style of play. So he's a little bit, obviously he's going to move around, but he's a different type of player.
He's never had the pace, has
no,
he?
No, he's not got that zip.
That burst, yeah.
He's not got that zip that those guys have had. So if he plays in one of those positions behind the striker, and even if he has a great game, I still think Chelsea have lost something by virtue of the fact that they haven't got one of the regulars.
But this is exactly why Conte has used him sparingly this season, why he hasn't started, because Conte has seen that. But I think it's been some great management by Conte. He used the word, we asked him about Fabregas about 2 months ago now, and he used the word genius. Now, we come out of the press conference delighted, because we've got a great line to ring our sports editors with and say, you're not going to believe this, Conte has just described him as a genius, as a man who's managed Andrea Pirlo, who has worked with genius, and he's just described a man who can't get past Conte and Matic this way. So, you know, I think he's been very clever there, Conte, and he's kept Fabregas, he's kept him on side, he's kept arm round the shoulder, look, you will get your opportunity. And you have to say, when he has come in, yeah, I agree with what Adrian was saying about his performance against Palace, but you have to say, in all the other games, when he's come in, he's looked superb.
Yeah, are you watching Jose Mourinho? Man management does matter.
Let's give him a bit of credit, the player himself. He has knuckled down. I thought he might kick off this season, Seth, but he hasn't, so fair play.
Yeah, what about the group as a whole? You know, we're already talking about next season. Now, there's some talk, well, a lot of talk about Alexis Sanchez going, Arsenal can't sell him to Chelsea,
I can't see how Arsenal can sell that to their fans. You know, I just think it's
They'll be over the barricades.
Yeah, exactly. Look,
they're going to be over the barricades anyway, aren't they? So, well, you know, it's a good day to bury bad news.
Wenger's
signing his new contract, but by the way, Alexis has gone to Chelsea and we've got 60 million quid.
I think after the Van Persie to United shenanigans, I just don't think Arsenal can entertain it as an option. They have to dig their heels in. Obviously, the first option is to try and keep him, get the arm around the shoulder, try and persuade him to stay. If that's not going to happen, they will have to sell him. But I think they have to dig their heels in and say, look, you're going to have to go overseas, because we can't. Arsenal cannot afford to sell him to Chelsea. The fans would just be up in arms, and I don't know how you come back from that.
Do you know the thing that strikes me about Sanchez, though, and I know Arsenal fans at the moment aren't particularly rational. There is this huge, you're either, you know, one side or the other. But if I was them, as great a player as Sanchez is, and as much as I enjoy watching him, I'd be starting to get a little bit annoyed about all this histrionics, all this flailing of the arms and blaming my teammates. And I'd be thinking to myself, I'm not sure I want that sort of character. I don't care how good he is. And we go back to Victor Moses and Alonso as being two players who, you know, the team is the sum of its parts. I'm not convinced that Sanchez is doing as much for team spirit at Arsenal, for the team ethic and environment there. And if Arsene Wenger came out and just said, look, he was kicking off day after day at training or whatever, we had no option but to get rid of him. Chelsea were the team who came in with the best money, the biggest amount that we could reinvest in talent to replace him with. You get two £30 million players in, or a £40 million and a £20 million coming through. I think you can sell that to fans if they're prepared to listen.
Chelsea have got Manchester City on Wednesday, then Bournemouth. You know, you're at the Emirates on Sunday, Adrian. What's your sense of where Man City are at the moment? They still look to me, to be honest, half a team. They've got a wonderful rotational front four, and the back four are pretty much paralysed.
Absolutely, yes. I think when you look at City's recruitment recently, the forward players have been spectacular. The defensive players have been atrocious. And when you watch City, that's what you see. You see a front five or six that's just outstanding, that will score goals for fun. The movement is fabulous. The cleverness of the tactics and the way they open up space. You sometimes have to be at the game to see it. And when I saw them firsthand, you know, it wasn't their best performance, but in that first half when they were on it, it was marvellous the way that City utilised the space. But if you can get at City, you will score goals. It's as simple as that. I think Pep Guardiola needs a brand new defence. He needs probably a new keeper, and he needs four or five new defensive players. He doesn't need a single new attacker.
Well, very easy, though, isn't it, Tom, to be blasé about money. Now, if you look at it, over the past four seasons, City have spent £535 million on players, over half a billion pounds. You wouldn't think so, would you?
You wouldn't. Well, you wouldn't. No, I mean, and it's on a positive spin. It shows you can't always buy silverware. I mean, I do expect them to spend big in the summer, but I also expect United to go big as well. Yeah. So that will be fascinating to see how that pans out.
They'll all do that, won't they? I can see Chelsea doing it.
I mean, Chelsea have long said to us that they haven't got the same bottomless pit as United and City have got. So, yeah, look, I mean, I'll expect them to spend big, but I would expect the two Manchester clubs to spend bigger. But I think there's a bigger point about it as well, that how many actual world-class defenders are there around at the moment? You know, David Luiz, we all questioned him when he was brought back to Chelsea, but he came in and in the three, he looks really solid when he's got a couple of players around him. But, you know, Company, I'm struggling to pick off too many absolute top quality defenders.
It's a good point. It is a good point. But I think part of the art of forming a good defence is not necessarily the quality of the individuals, it's the organisation of the group. And I think on that score, a lot of modern coaches seem to neglect
this it. This is why Conte's done so well, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because he's
Pep Guardiola, there are question marks over his astuteness as a defensive coach. I understand that he wants to dominate possession, he wants to take the game to teams, and that's attack is the best form of defence. But I still would say that they're making the same mistakes over and over again. And if you're a manager, I think it's your responsibility to address that. So I think
it'd be interesting to see if he does address it, if he has learnt his lesson this season with the fact that this, you know, I know he got a lot of stick mid-season and he sort of waved that away about the defensive side of it and the dereliction of defence.
So intense, so obsessive, yet he doesn't seem, he seems to be, have those qualities in terms of what they do with the ball. He doesn't seem to have the same obsession of what they do without the ball. And I think he already is a world-class coach, but to become a legendary coach that proves he can do it anywhere, I think he has to do that with City. He has to improve them defensively.
If you look around at defenders, to take your point, Tom, players who've done well under defensive coaches, you know, Karanka before he was sacked at Middlesbrough, he's really brought on Ben Gibson.
Yeah.
Sean Dyche at Burnley has really brought on Michael Keane. Do you expect those two young players to move on in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there are some very good players. I mean, Gibson, absolutely, if Middlesbrough, as it looks quite likely at the moment, go down, then, yeah, I would expect him to get a big move. But you've also got the lad at Swansea, Alfie Mawson who looks a very good prospect. And there's one other who's escaping me at the moment. There's four young lads in the Premier League who all look like they have got what it takes to jump up to the level, the talent, or the potential, should I say. But, you know, again, it is making that move. And with John Stones, Holgate was the other one I was thinking of, another lad who looks very good at Everton. But with John Stones, I wrote a column about it just before he left Everton. I would love to have seen him have one more season there under Koeman, because I think he would really have benefited from working with someone who had mastered that position and before he made that step up to Manchester.
And for defenders, I think, look, you get more practice. It's as simple as that.
Well, that's why Michael Keane's another one.
He's
another one we should have mentioned. He has got a massive decision to make in the summer, hasn't he? You know, he's got all the top clubs chasing him. I know there is interest from United, even though he's not in their top of their list. City, I think, will come in for him. But, you know, would he be better?
Liverpool
and Everton are the two who are strongest for him at the moment.
Okay.
And I think he'd be better off going to one of those two clubs, because he would get game time there. And he's proved at Burnley how advantageous that has been to his game.
I think there's a big difference. I think we've seen this over the last few years as well. There's a big difference between being a decent Premier League central defender and being good enough to make the difference in the Champions League. And I would say that, I mean, our record in recent seasons for English clubs is shocking defensively in the Champions League. When we come up against the Monacos of
Where's Morgan and Robert Huth are doing all right?
They are, actually. They've done all right.
But they're experienced defenders, aren't they?
You take my point. Defensively, we've got a lot of work to do, the English clubs in general. It's pretty poor across
the board. What about Arsenal's defensive problems? You know, Koscielny, Achilles problems for another month, probably.
I thought we'd moved on from Arsenal.
Yeah, it always comes back to haunt you, mate, don't worry. If you look at that defence, Gabriel against Andy Carroll at the Emirates on Wednesday night.
Well, Arsenal need to learn lessons, because one game that stands out for me is the Upton Park game last season. I think it was 3 apiece. Yeah. And Arsenal played as if they'd never heard of Andy Carroll, and they totally ignored him, and he was outstanding. He destroyed them. And so Arsenal have to learn lessons from that. They have to engage with him. They have to not give him a 4-yard run-up when the ball comes into the box. It's not just down to Gabriel, it's not just down to Mustafi. I think the fullbacks have a big job to play in this game for Arsenal. They need to stop the supply line, they need to get tight, block crosses, because if West Ham are allowed to fling balls into the box, I am nervous. I think most Arsenal fans would be nervous with Andy Carroll loitering, because he has hurt them before.
What about Mertesacker? I know he's been, you know, way out beyond sort of Pluto, really. Would he be someone you could bring back just to do a job on a game like this?
Well, the man's got 90 plus Germany caps. Of course he would. You know,
he's not played since pre-season.
No, that's the problem with him. I mean, I've always been bewildered by Per Mertesacker, the way he's been over here, because I spent the first season he was here saying, look, this is a fella who's won all these caps for probably the best international team on the planet, or second best. People will be saying Spain would be ahead of them. But you know, a defender with vast experience, and yet, you know, you always want to give them a season to settle, don't you? But then he never replicated the sort of levels that he got to with Germany in the Premier League. But for a one-off game, I still think, you know, he's certainly well-rested. Yeah. So I don't see a reason why he couldn't come in and with all that nous and experience, do a job against
my feeling here is that Arsene Wenger will look at this as a game where West Ham are potentially there for the taking. And I don't think he'll be focusing too much on Andy Carroll. That might turn out to be a big mistake, but I think he'll be focusing on how can we dismantle a fragile-looking West Ham side. So I don't think Mertesacker will play, but I would see the logic in bringing him in.
What would you make of the politics at West Ham at the moment, Tom? You know, we've got the board on one hand saying, you know, results need to improve, we need to be better. And on the other hand, saying, oh, these nasty boys in the press are saying that Bilic is under pressure. It's not doing the manager any favour whatsoever, is it?
No, it's not the first time we've seen this, is it, from West Ham? I mean, you think back to the end of Sam Allardyce's reign, and there were these sort of counter arguments coming from either side. I mean, I've spoken to people who look after managers, and they say that there has been interest from West Ham, or not conversations with people who would know what the West Ham board are thinking. So there's not been any direct talk, but there, you know, the feelers have been put out. Now
that's pretty normal, isn't it?
Of course it is, and it's only natural in football that if a manager isn't getting results, you have to have.
Well, why then would they say that they 100% got 100%?
And you do have to give Sullivan and Gold. Now, let's go back a couple of years actually, because he wasn't the first choice, was he? He was about the seventh choice manager to get the job. They Benitez was all ready to sign until Real Madrid came in
and about half an hour to spare,
gazumped them. So, you know, Bilic came in, and then I think as far as the board were concerned at West Ham, he overperformed last year. They weren't expecting him to finish where they did, to get such performances out of Antonio, Payet, and the rest of the squad. So this season they're actually starting from a bit of a disadvantage. I think this season is more of what they're expecting last year. But of course, given those lofty ambitions and expectations because of what happened 12 months ago, the fans have demanded more. And then there's the backdrop of the stadium move and everything. So I feel a bit for Bilic, because I think he's a really honest man. I really like the way he approaches it. Very open, very good to deal with. I like the style of football he plays, and I don't think he's had a bit of bad luck with injuries this year. But I still think that West Ham will look to change in the summer.
Look, the squad has gone backwards. That much is
recruitment's
is
been
obvious.
Terrible. Isn't it?
Recruitment
well,
was
he's
awful.
Not in charge of recruitment.
No, exactly. I think you have to take that into account. I think that he's a really good manager. I think he'll succeed somewhere else. But the bottom line is that they will sack him if they continue to lose games. So,
but you have to give Sullivan and Gold credit. They don't
at least they're
sack
open.
Managers. You know, they don't make a habit of sacking they managers.
Don't.
Allardyce was at the end of the contract and they just decided not to renew it. You know, so
Bilic's body language from August to April has been poor. And I think the spark has gone out of Bilic this season. I can't explain what it is. He's got a new baby, hasn't he? Maybe he's tired. I don't know. I know the feeling.
But he's got the hip problem as well.
He's got an operation in the summer for that, hasn't he?
The bright, tactically aware coach that was able to motivate his players and get that extra 5-10%. That's not the Bilic we've seen this season. Yeah.
I'm sorry to drag you back to Arsenal. Just one more time.
I'm going to.
Jack Wilshere.
Yeah.
A lot of talk, £30 million to West Ham.
Yeah.
How realistic is that?
I would say it's actually quite realistic, yeah. I wouldn't dismiss it. I think it's down to a West Ham fan. Arsenal, will he be a regular at Arsenal? I think it comes to the stage where he needs to play regular football. Personally, I still believe in Jack Wilshere. I still think he is a class player. that can influence
games
at the highest level.
Do you believe in him at Arsenal, though? I think that's the question, isn't it?
I do, but do I believe that he will be... I actually think if he had a whole season injury-free at Arsenal in a midfield three, I think that's important. Arsenal often play with a midfield two. I think I would like to see Arsenal change to a midfield three because they don't have enough defensive mobility to cope with the two. So I would make a midfield three. And in a three, with a full season, I believe Jack Wilshere would be outstanding for Arsenal because he's tailor-made for the way that they play the game. But do I think he'll get that opportunity? I have grave reservations. So it might be time for him to move on.
I think mentally it's time for Jack Wilshere to move on. From an individual, personal level, it's time for him to completely cut his ties. Mm.
Tottenham. Won more points in 2017-26 than anyone else in the Premier League. Can they realistically stop Chelsea?
It's going to be very difficult, and it's going to take a... It's not in Spurs' hands. It's just dependent on what Chelsea do. Can Spurs win every game between now and the end of the season? Absolutely. They've got a wonderful starting 11. Harry Kane is expected now to be back, I think, the weekend after next, or the weekend after this one coming, should I say, which will be a huge fillip for them in terms
just
of...
Just in time for the FA Cup.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Pochettino... I think what he's done very cleverly, and not just Pochettino, but Daniel Levy deserves a lot of credit for going out and getting Pochettino in the first place, and for the way he often gets a lot of stick for the way he manages players' contracts, but they seem to be bringing through a group, 5-6 young English players. It's almost similar to the way Manchester United did it back in with that class of 92. Yeah. Mm. Now, you have to get a little bit lucky that you have to identify the talent in the first place and they all have to progress at exactly the same... progress just as you expect them to. But with Pochettino and with the way they've all been managed, they've done that. And I think they'll have learned huge lessons from
that. It's a great analogy. I think you bang on. I really do. When you see this Spurs team, this squad, it's just together. You can see, they've grown up together. He doesn't need to tinker with it too much.
But he probably does need one sort of very experienced player to come in,
striker?
I think so.
Not for sure.
I don't think you cannot rely on Kane. Well, you can rely on him getting 20, 25 goals every season, but you can't. He needs a buffer, and he actually needs a bit of competition, I think, because, you know, let's say he does get to 20 goals this season. He's on 19, I think, now, isn't he? So the chances are he will. That's three seasons he's done it, so he's automatically the first choice, and he knows that. Now, if they bring in somebody else who actually is going to push him on a weekly basis, then that could be the difference between Harry Kane getting between 25 and 30 goals every season, or hitting that 30 mark. Mm.
Do teams like this have an almost an inbuilt obsolescence? In other words, if they don't win anything for a couple of years, Dele Alli, Kane, those sort of players who are massively attractive in the modern transfer market, will be vulnerable to people whispering in their ear.
You would have thought so, yeah. Because you do get people whispering in your ear, and players are continually told, especially by ex-players, actually, that your career is defined by silverware and trophies. And I sometimes think that is overblown because, don't get me wrong, it's great to have a career where you've won a stack load of medals. You don't end up looking at them all the time. I think there was also a really strong, powerful case, especially in Harry Kane's situation, to make yourself a club legend and to see it all the way through. But I think to earn legendary status, you do need silverware. When you think about all the clubs, when they've got their former players back there working for them, that 9 times out of 10, those players were part of successful teams that won trophies. So, it comes hand in hand. But I think Spurs are capable of keeping their players if they don't win anything this season. But if it goes on two or three years,
I agree with that. And I think Ali will want to go abroad and test himself at some point. I think Eric Dier will be an interesting one, obviously being linked with Manchester United in the summer.
Do you think Ali could be like a £100 million player? Do you think he's capable of being in that category?
Wouldn't even think twice about that. If I had that sort of, if I was a club owner with that sort of money to spend, would not think twice about spending it. And particularly in this day and age, when you look at the Pogba deal, £89 million over 5 years, realistically, what is that with all the marketing? So you make your £100 million back in no time
for
at
his
all.
Age,
but the value that you get on the field out of Dele Alli as well. I mean, I just absolutely love
and they bought like well, you know, and this probably highlights a potential issue in the next couple of weeks. Victor Wanyama has had a great season, And Harry Winks as well is obviously going to be out as well. Mm. Will that have a big impact?
It really could, because Wanyama's
That's where Spurs are, isn't it? Well, yeah, they don't have the depth
of
squad.
Well, they've got the two pillars, haven't they, in there? Dembele and Wanyama work wonderfully together. They're so powerful. I think that's not the bedrock of the team, but it's a really important ingredient of the team. So with him missing, and Winks was the understudy, then that's an issue, isn't it? But so there might be a system change. But we've seen with Pochettino, and this is another reason I rate him so highly, is that he can tinker with his shape week in, week out. And you don't notice. Mm. It's not to the detriment of the team. You wouldn't actually, unless somebody told you or you really studied it, you wouldn't always know if Spurs were playing with three at the back or four or what their configuration was. So I actually think that they're going to cope okay.
And if if they do lose Danny Rose in the summer, there's a lot of talk that Manchester City will come for him. I mean, he's been superb this year, as has Kyle Walker. And so if he does go for Luke Shaw, which is an obvious target for him, given the fact he's worked together and worked very well with him in the past, I'm going to bring it back to Arsenal again, if you don't mind. Now, this is with Pochettino and with changing manager. I'm not saying change managers every season, but if you change managers every sort of three or four seasons and keep things fresh, then once a position becomes in need of a replacement, that manager will know players that he's worked with in the past. Now, Arsene Wenger, the position he's in, he hasn't worked with anyone other than the group he's had. So, you know, it's not like he could go, I know who, Wanyama. I can look at Dembele, who, I love that quote the other day, by the way, that if I'd have had him when he was 19 or 20, he'd be a world-class player, I actually think is probably true. I mean, I think, again, another wonderful player. But I just think the way he sort of said, right, Wanyama slots in there for me, and I know he can do it because I've worked with him. Right, Luke Shaw will come in as a ready-made replacement if we lose Danny Rose. But the only reason that Danny Rose would go to Manchester City really is financial isn't it? Because I think, you know, I think Tottenham are in very much a position to challenge City for silverware in the next few years.
Yeah. Tom mentioned Luke Shaw in dispatches.
Yeah.
We know about Mourinho, famous or infamous for parking
Loves
the
young
bus.
Players, doesn't he?
Well, he's throwing a few under the bus now, isn't he? When you think about it, if you're a player, you put your player's head on. When your manager says that about you publicly, what do you do?
Well, I think he overstepped the line there. Yeah. I think if it was
basically,
me...
Basically, he's accusing of not trying in training.
He's questioning his professionalism. And I think if I was Luke Shaw, the first question I'd ask myself is he right? I think that's what you have to... You should ask yourself that question. I'm assuming that
Luke
Shaw...
Do players ask that question?
Yeah, of course. Well, the good players should. You have to self-assess. Yeah. And I do think that we don't always give them kudos for doing that. They do that. They study their own games. And I think that normally a manager, if they say something like that, would have grounds to say it. But I do think... And we don't know. We're not at Manchester United. All I say is I remember Luke Shaw coming back from pre-season early in the summer. There were pictures of him working on his own, really grafting to get himself back in shape. That wasn't a player that didn't care. And I've seen no signs when I look at Luke Shaw. I've seen no signs of him being lazy. So look, if I was Luke Shaw, I would have banged on that dressing room, banged on the manager's door, and said, what the heck?
What the heck have you said that for?
Why have you said that for? And I would be saying, look, if you don't fancy me, fair enough, sell me. But if you don't fancy me, don't cast aspersions over my professionalism. I think it's bang out of order.
Mm. What about the impact also of Mourinho's attitude? You know, you talked about doesn't really like young players, to someone like Marcus Rashford. Now, here's someone who's come in, absolutely exploded onto the scene. He's having his problems, and that's probably to be expected. He's only really, it's sort of second season syndrome sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, when you're that age, and Adrian I'd hope will back this up, you know, you do have a step forward, then maybe a step two back, and then you go forward.
You need people to trust you.
You do, absolutely. But the problem, you see, last year, everyone sort of was so quick to praise Louis van Gaal for putting Rashford in. He had no choice. Injuries and suspensions meant he had no choice. So Rashford was able to go in with the confidence that whatever happens in this game, he'd got that exuberance of youth anyway, but he got the confidence that whatever happens, I will probably be starting next week as well, or I'll be involved heavily. Now, this year, they haven't got that. Mourinho's brought in Ibrahimovic, so Rashford, when he has played, has been put out to the left-hand side and moved around a little bit. And I do wonder how much... whether there's a little bit of players in the shadow of Ibrahimovic. I know having him in there is a fantastic learning.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, you look at the way he trains, look at his professionalism. But if he starts getting at you, or if he sort of isn't mega impressed with you, then does it start to have a detrimental effect on young players?
Marcus Rashford plays at the weekend, right, against West Bromwich Albion, scores two, has a blinder. He knows he's not going to play next weekend because he's Zlatan's back. That plays in the mind, in a young player's head. That gets to you because you think, okay, you don't actively think it doesn't matter what I do, I'm not going to play next week. But it can have an effect on a player, and not a positive one.
And also, you put yourself, I'm going to defend Mourinho here a little bit, because you put yourself in his position, and his job is to make sure Manchester United win football matches. Now, it's not the player's fault. They are, it's obviously a chicken and egg situation here, but it's not the player's fault that they are earning the sort of money that they earn. If we all thought we could get the best contract we can get, we would go for it and we would sign it. But I do understand Mourinho's position a little bit, that he's probably looking at the likes of Rashford, the likes of Lingard, and one or two others around there, and seeing them going out, and there's pieces in the paper about it today, and have been for the last couple of weeks, the amount of money they're spending and the focus they're spending elsewhere. Now, I don't begrudge the players that, because it's their money, they can do with it
and
as they
like. And that's the reality of modern
and
football.
And it is the reality of modern football, but I also look at from a manager's perspective, and I think, you know, it's timing with these things, isn't it?
What's the issue here?
Well, just this whole bling culture at Manchester United. There's almost the focus is on what players can spend their money on next, rather than actually.
Well,
don't give them
so much money then. You know.
And
someone else will.
That's the problem. So it's not an easy job from Mourinho. You know, if I felt that my players, like as a manager, you'll know what managers wanted from you. They want you to go into training, be absolutely on it for a couple of hours in the morning to then do your warm down and everything properly, go home and rest, and basically be ready for the next morning.
And they wanted you to be married.
So if they see all these, you know, it's like Beckham, you know, with Ferguson, he tired of seeing him appearing at every fashion show or whatever.
Jose's doing a good
job. And that was David Beckham, who was ultra professional.
Yeah, Jose's doing a good job. It's a good, solid job. United, I think they are moving forward. I know that they've got their problems in front of goal, but I do think there's a slight danger of a little bit of resentment setting in inside the dressing room, because he would never take Zlatan off, and he would never. He would play Pogba. He would keep Pogba on, even if he's having a nightmare. And I do think that sometimes it might help Manchester United in the long run if he just took one of them out. If they weren't doing the business, if he removed them, because I think that would perk up some of the fringe guys like Rashford.
I think Rashford needs to go out on loan next season. Just have a season somewhere where he's going to play Premier League club, but somewhere he's going to play week in, week out.
Right. Let's look at one of the other realities of maybe a darker reality of modern football, the sort of bullying culture that we see. United are playing at Sunderland on Sunday. Should David Moyes be Sunderland manager for that game? He said he's not going to resign because of the, he's apologised for the incident with the female reporter where he was reported to have threatened her. What's your take on that, Tom?
Yes, he should be manager for the next game. I don't think he should lose his job over this. He hasn't assaulted anyone. It was a threat, but I don't think anyone, even the reporter involved, would feel that threat was ever going to be carried out. No. But what needs to happen, he does need to be made an example of, and whether that's forced to publicly apologise on the pitch to Vicky Sparks, isn't it? The name of the reporter is not somebody I know, but whether it's forced to apologise in public to her, which, to be fair, she probably wouldn't want, or just to go through some sort of educational process very publicly. So
that's what the FA will do, won't it?
Well, they do. I mean, look, there's going to be no greater punishment for David Moyes, I don't think, than the fact that this story has come out and that he's going to be he has been widely condemned, and it will always be used against him in years to
that's
come.
Embarrassing.
But I mean, it's massively embarrassing. I mean, you and I have, I know, spent time with David Moyes privately and professionally, and he's very good company. I have to say, when we were with him socially, that was just a group of men, wasn't it? We take that into account. But I also, I was in America a couple of weeks ago with ESPN and through BT Sport, and we were taken over there to speak to NBA people who are involved with the NBA. And I was talking to Sage Steele, who presents Sports Center and the NBA's build up, and asking her a little bit about, as a woman in the media over there, how she finds it. And she says that she doesn't feel that there are any barriers over there anymore. And she said a lot of the credit, you know, obviously she's had it in the past, but she said a lot of the credit has to go to the players and the way they are with me, because they just treat me as any other journalist. It doesn't matter what sex I am. And I think that's something that English football needs to learn from, because there are still, as this incident has proved, underlying issues.
Well, and it's a nonsense. They've come up with the, some people have come up with the banter defence. Oh,
that's
only
ridiculous.
Banter.
No, rubbish. No, it's not banter. Yeah. It's nasty. Yeah.
There was an underlying threat, wasn't there?
It's
not to ask questions like that again.
Does football, Adrian, have a bullying problem?
The issue exists, definitely. But I don't know. I come from an era where I was brought up with the hard knocks, in a way. I was an apprentice at Arsenal where you'd be bullied by your manager into doing certain things, and it wasn't all about niceties. And that was character building. But I think this is completely different, and that this is a nasty threat that needs to be stamped out. I do think that this season, managers in the Premier League have been quite rude, or more rude to the media than I can remember.
There's no place for someone belittling someone.
Pep Guardiola has belittled journalists.
We've all had it, haven't we? And I don't mind. I mean, we've all had run-ins with managers, and we've all, we're there to ask questions. Mm. And if someone was asking me questions about my job day in, day out, questioning my decisions, there'd be times I'd lose my rag. So I have no problem with them losing their rag. And if a manager threatened to slap me in exactly the same manner that Moyes did, I would be speaking to the club and saying to them in private, look, I don't expect this to be carried out in public, but I want an apology for him over that. I think that's, I can't sit here and say he should be sacked because I said it to a woman, because if you ask any female broadcaster or journalist or anyone who's involved in football, the argument is, look, we just want treating fairly. We don't want treating
He should face the music for this. He shouldn't just be removed from the firing line. He should have to front up, face the music, be embarrassed and learn from it. Because it gets, what he said was horribly old-fashioned and nasty. So you can't do that.
Yeah. With Sunderland, let's look at it. Has he done a decent enough job?
No, he's done a terrible job.
To keep his job anyway.
They're
going to go down, aren't they?
They've gone backward massively, haven't they?
Not a particularly good starting position.
No, but Sam Allardyce, he got a tune out of that group of players, a lot of them. Okay, I just think the signings he made were woeful. You talked about managers having an advantage of working with former players. I mean, it's been a disadvantage for David Moyes, because he's turned to players that he's worked with in the past that are past it. And they've offered nothing, really. So I think Moyes has had a nightmare season, really. I think he's had one good game at Crystal Palace. Other than that, it's been disastrous. I think if you stuck Sunderland in the Championship, they wouldn't even be in the playoffs. They're that bad.
And that's terrible for a club with fantastic fan base. But maybe they're just flirting with relegation once too often.
I think they've flirted with the drop once too often. And I think, they're obviously going to lose Jermaine Defoe in the summer. There's a clause in there, isn't there? It's been reported that if they get relegated, he can go. But I think he'll go anyway.
Do you think David Moyes has no option but to stay, though, does he? Because
if he leaves now, this could be his final.
Done.
This could be what he's remembered for. Not the job and this issue that has come to the fore.
Moyes
now
is done
well.
If he leaves this job now. He has to stay and hope that he can bring them up.
The one bright spark, or the one positive that you would look at if you're a Sunderland fan, you'd just be looking just over the bridge and saying what's happened at Newcastle. Mm-hmm. They went down, they took their medicine, they learned from their mistakes, and yes, they have a manager in who has achieved a lot more in the game than David Moyes have done, but he's brought players in, he's got them working again, they've spent money and they've come back up. That's the only way this is a positive.
But Sunderland won't spend money until the owner decides what he's going to do.
And if he sells it, there'll be change anyway.
And if he sells it now, he's going to lose some serious money, isn't he? Or sells it when they go down, he's going to lose some serious money.
I think they're the next filler.
You saw Palace. I just want to give you a little insight into what's to come for them. Their running is horrendous. Mm. Southampton on Wednesday, Arsenal Monday, Leicester, Liverpool, Spurs, Burnley, perhaps a win, Man City, Hull, Man United. That's one heck of a run.
Have you learned nothing from the weekend, though? You've gone through that and said perhaps a win against Burnley. But as the weekend results have shown, anyone, you can get a result on your day. I mean, look, they've four wins out of four. I actually did a little line in a column about a month ago saying that this is... the run-in, and that if Sam pulls this one off, you know, it's the greatest achievement of his managerial career. And they have gone on to win the last four games, and none of us saw that result coming, did they? I still think it's going to be very difficult for them, but I think anything's possible, and particularly the injuries that they sustained at the weekend won't have done them any favours, but I think Delaney is still a very good, solid Premier League central defender. I think Sacco is a man with a point to prove to Jurgen Klopp, and I'm still struggling to get my head around why Klopp would let him go, even if, you know, surely just keep him for 6 months, even if you really want
and
him
Zaha
out.
And Zaha looks to me like someone playing for a move.
Quite possibly. Zaha, I've never been a massive fan of him. I thought he's been a flaky footballer.
It's an enigma, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an enigma. But he's channelling his ability now, or Sam is helping to channel his ability in the right way. He's finally found end product, and at the moment he's probably the most dangerous player in the Premier League to come up against for defenders at the moment, Wilfried Zaha. You'd imagine that this run of form will see him moving on in the summer. Although I did hear that they're trying to tie him down to 110 grand a week. He's currently on 30. So that's a heck of a leap, isn't it?
If I was him, I'd be wondering where that money's been, though, for the last 5 years, if all of a sudden they can ban it. But, I know they've got the new investment.
And if I was Crystal Palace, I wouldn't be giving him 110 grand a week. I'd be selling him. There is nothing to guarantee that Wilfried Zaha can maintain this
over
a period of time.
Is he going to be the talisman? I tell you who, and Sam did this with Kershaw at Sunderland, who came in and popped from an absolutely disastrous
horrendous debut.
Then did very well. But the lad, I apologise. Thank you. he has come in and he looks very, very good signing. So he could be the sort of player that they'd be better off with. You know, for the next season, they'd be better off with another 10 of him than a Wolf. I know every team needs flair players, but a player like that would guarantee your Premier League survival.
What about Hull? Six wins out of seven at home under new manager.
Says a lot, because actually, when you're at the bottom of the table and you play at home, even though you think, right, this is a home game, this is our chance to win, actually, the home games, you go into them with a bit more pressure. Because you are expected to win. So I think Hull deserve a lot of credit for the way they've handled their home games. And Silva is a manager that's really impressed me. Much the same as Allardyce of late. He's obviously organised and he's got balance. And Hull City, tactically, he's mixed things up. He radically changed things against West Ham at half-time at the weekend. Turned that game around. I think Hull are going to survive. I'm pretty confident that they're going to stay up.
So Swansea or Palace then, is it?
Yeah.
I tell you what's interesting with Silva is that when he came in, and we're all guilty of it, we all said, oh, George Mendes will put the players in. Now, look, that did happen. But it would be lazy of us to say that the reason that they're getting the wins now is because of the recruitment. And because, as Adrian says, you know, he has had to do a very good job on the training ground and drill those players superbly to be getting the results that they're getting.
Yeah. Will Hull effectively send Middlesbrough down by winning on Wednesday?
Middlesbrough down anyway. I don't think it matters. I just can't see them scoring enough.
Only
goals
20 goals all season.
Yeah, they're gone. And they've got themselves to blame, I think. I think somebody should have been putting a little bit more pressure on Karanka. Steve Gibson gets a lot of credit, and I think he's a good owner.
Yeah.
But somebody at the club, I think, should have been applying firmer pressure on him to say, look, we're not going to score enough goals this season. We're playing too defensively earlier. And I think they made the change too late. Mm. I'm surprised, actually, that Agnew, you know, rookie manager, has been charged with the task of keeping them up. But, yeah, they're gone.
You agree with that?
I agree, yeah. It's just the goals. I mean, I actually think Valdez in goal is, you know, he's done superbly. Someone made a point in the column about it at the weekend that for him to reignite that fire in his own belly after, you know, going to Manchester United, the way things worked out for him, given the illustrious career he's had, and for him to have played the way he's played this season, I think is very impressive. But they just haven't scored the goals.
Should have signed more strikers. I actually would have tried. You know who'd have tried up front? Traore. Because, I mean, he's such a hit or miss player, crazy player.
He doesn't know what he's going to do, so how can the defender?
So I think on the wings, he has the odd, you know, odd blinder, doesn't he? But actually, if you put him down the middle, a bit of chaos factor. I think Agnew tried that at the weekend, and there were flashes there, but it's too little, too late.
So let's sum this up then. If we agree that Chelsea are going to win the league, yeah?
Yep.
And we agree that Sunderland and Middlesbrough are nailed on the go down, Who fills that third spot?
Well, I've already nailed my colours to the hull mast, haven't I? So I think they will survive. Which I guess, yeah, it puts Palace, Swansea and Burnley into the mix. Because Burnley are in freefall, yeah, aren't they, at the moment?
And there's always a team, isn't there? There is always one too. We've said this all season. There's always a team in the second half of the season who drop. And this was always going to be a problem. All right, winning all these games at home. Yeah. But when you're losing all these games away and when you start losing the odd game here and there at home, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think they might scrape it, Burnley. I think Swansea. I think Swansea, if Llorente hits a hot streak, they might be all right. But if he doesn't, they could be gone.
I think Burnley. I think Paul Clement does enough at Swansea to keep them up, and I think Silva does at Hull.
Like Adrian, I have a feeling that Hull will survive. Now, could that be bad news for Palace or even West Ham? Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.